and welcome to another episode of the Odd Topic Podcast. My name is Brett. Today, I'm joined as usual, my fellow co-host, Mr. Luke Hawkins.
Hello.
Today, we are going to tackle back to my, I don't know, the thing that I love talking about for some unknown reason.
It's not cryptids.
It's not cryptids. Luke gets cryptids, I get something else. And for me, it is random things that tribes do in random places.
You do like tribe stuff.
I don't know why, but it's so interesting.
It's like your instincts are kicking in, man.
Probably. I don't know. I enjoy kind of tribal cultures and to know how the hell they survived without internet for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how I'll do it, but it's cool. Sure.
Yeah. That statement alone just reveals how millennial we are.
Aye, if you make your living off of using the internet, you can justify the fact that you need internet.
Which we don't. I mean,
yeah, but I mean, we need it for the podcast.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about rites of passage. And I don't even know, Luke, is yours actually even tribal?
It is, actually.
Okay, that's very cool.
They kind of have to be. Most of them fall under the kind of tribal banner.
Well, I will list a few that aren't tribal, but they still are very non-modern kind of cultures. Mine's tribal for the most of it. But I think this, you're right, like rites of passage and all that kind of stuff, it's more kept with tribal nations. Like they kind of stick to their traditions.
And also like frat houses and stuff.
Yeah, but that's just
like malicious stuff. You know?
Yeah, fair enough.
Kind of a rite of passage. That's kind of what I was thinking of doing for the thing. I'm like, well, you know, in matric or grade 12, whatever it is, you kind of get to haze the grade 8s and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's like a rite of passage into the high school.
I remember at my school, and this probably reveals a lot, all the grade 8s, basically like the new boys that came in, we all wore buttons on our blazers, and that kind of button, its color represented what house you were in, and we weren't allowed ties. So throughout our whole grade 8 year, you had to earn your tie.
Okay.
And we got given a booklet, and that booklet basically contained all the information. So it was the prefix, the school history, rules and regulations, that whole spiel, and you had to write a test.
Set by the matrix.
Yeah. So in that test, okay, let's get real. The matrix just used the previous year's test. It never changed. And in that test, you wrote the test. If you passed, you got your tie back. And three failures. And I can't remember what happened, but no one ever made it three failures. And you get your tie back, and it's like this huge ceremony. And then at the end of the year, you could take your button off.
Okay.
So the button was there to signify, okay, you're a new guy or whatever. You have to call everyone sir and ma'am and all that. It's like all your superiors. So, yeah, it was pretty hectic, I won't lie. But it's a rite of passage. Having your tie and getting the button taken off, it's a rite of passage. And without it, where is tradition?
Yeah. I guess, I mean, mine wasn't nearly as bad. I think the previous years were a little bit rough, but I went to a bit of a less big school, shall we say.
Yeah, your school is about like a quarter of the size of mine.
I went to like a Lawney private school. And they weren't allowed to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had to, although yours didn't sound bad, but there wasn't none of the like embarrassingness.
No, we never had that either. I mean, the schools are clamping down heavily on nowadays. Yeah. I mean, especially back when we were at school.
We basically had to find a rock.
Okay.
And had to be of a certain size. It's quite a heavy thing.
Obviously.
And we had to draw a face in it and glue stuff on it and stuff, like all creatively. We're like, okay, what are we doing this for? And they're like, cool, you have to keep this with you for the rest of the year. And if any matric asks you to present your rock, you have to show them the rock. Get it out your bag on top of all your books. Take the rock, and you obviously have to give it a name. And you always had to like talk nicely to your pet rock. And
Did you at least get to choose the size of your rock?
Yeah, kind of. But I was so dumb, dude. I should have like picked a smooth,
that's what
easy
I'm
one.
Thinking, yeah.
I picked this jaggedy, like you know those
brick.
Those like rocks that you see like lining garden beds as like granite chunks.
Oh, no.
And like one of these heavy things with me the whole time, dude. It was such a rookie move.
That's why Luke's so buff nowadays. He's going to carry that rock around with him for years. Well, you're lucky you got a rock. We got an egg, man.
Egg. Couldn't you just boil it?
That's what everyone said. But what we ended up doing was changing the eggs out and then repainting the face. Because what the matrix would do is some of them would sign the egg to make sure it was the same one.
Yeah.
But then they never ever checked the signature. So you could just like mock up their signature and they'll be like, oh, you took a check. Cool. And we're like,
this is dumb.
My cousin was actually my matric for that year.
That's lucky.
bastard made me plant a grape seed because he said he needed more shade and I had to come and water it every day.
I know. Does something actually grow?
No, hell no.
Who knows? Just now you have a grapevine. You know?
No, man. You made me plant this grape. Climate. Yeah. That's the problem with that story. That's the problem, yeah. I think I was just a terrible garden boy. So the rites of passage we're going to be speaking about today are completely different from those we just mentioned. Obviously, there are a lot of modern day, like, I don't know, traditional things, but I enjoy the really weird and odd ones, the ones that kind of stand out. Today, I'm talking about the Huanglo Yao kind of village.
Sorry, what?
Yeah, I'm not repeating that again. Luke, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about, I've kept a secret.
I know, I actually have no idea what he's talking about.
Makes it sound so ominous, but yeah. It's actually quite a well-known one. It's the Maasai rite of passage tradition.
Ooh, I like the sound of
where
that.
Where they, Maasai being the Kenyans.
Yeah.
And then they have to, well, just
okay, okay, we'll get to that, we'll get to that. So, mine, as I said earlier, is the Huanglo Yao kind of village. And they reside on the banks of the Jinsha River. In kind of this really mountainous and remote area in China. And so basically they were unreachable until about 2002 when the Chinese government decided to launch almost like a tourism reform program.
Okay. And unreachable like where they physically were located or...
Basically, where they're physically like located. No, not untouchables, but just where they're located, it's quite a process to get there. There wasn't public transport or anything like that. This village is the home to the Red Yao people. They're an indigenous community originating from the Qin Dynasty. The word red got added to their commune because of the traditional hand-woven red jackets and shirts that the woman wore during festivals and carnivals. So they're not super rural or anything like that. I mean, they had decent kind of things about them, but I think the Chinese government wanted to push them because of what I'm going to kind of go through now. So with a population of about 600 tribe members making up about 78 families, the Huanglo Yao villages have a very particular and famous trait. The women have pitch black long hair that since the day they were born, they've never been cut. These villages have been dubbed the real life Rapunzels. For the women of this village, hair is kind of like their most prized possession. They've actually got a Guinness Book of World Records for being the world's longest hair village. Jeez. I kind of feel at some point, like, Guinness just makes up stuff. Yeah. I mean, like, imagine there's the world's longest hair. There's the world's longest hair village. But I mean,
yeah, that, what is yeah, that?
I don't know.
Maybe because it's the only one?
Probably.
I wonder what it's like walking down the streets and you're just like, all this hair everywhere.
They don't throw the hair away. Yeah, I'll tell you about that now. So it's normal for the girls to have like long, silky black hair that's up to about 1.5 meters long and weighs about a kg. While only a handful of them have hair around about 1.9 meters. And the longest recorded was 2.1 meters in 2004.
They must have pretty strong necks, dude.
Yeah, hectically. Yeah. I mean, like you're basically carrying over a kg on your head at all times. The Yao women have proudly passed on this tradition of growing hair from generation to generation. The secret behind kind of the pitch black hair is they got a pretty specific beauty regimen that they kind of run through. And they've been practicing this for years. Every day, they will wash their hair in the river water, but on the third or fourth day, they use a special concoction to rinse their hair with. The concoction is made with fermented rice water, boiled, with pomelo skins. Pomelo apparently is like a grapefruit.
Okay.
And a tea plant seed oil. The women rinse their hair with a special kind of shampoo, if you want to call it that, and use a wooden comb to spread the concoction kind of evenly from their roots to their tips. Apparently, this is the reason why their hair is so dark in color. I mean, they have zero gray hairs even at their old age. I mean, I saw photos of, old within their 60s, 70s, like these Chinese women with pitch black hair. I've got gray hairs already, dude. Like, this is unfair. I don't get this.
Well, you know what you need to do. Boil some rice water.
Unfortunately, I don't have a river to go and wash my hair in every day. I don't think dam water is going to cut it.
No, probably not. Although river water is Depending, okay, I don't know the area, but maybe, is it clean?
Well, mountainous, like, village in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. It's going to be, like, almost crystal, like, water.
I wonder if like, let's say that, like, well, maybe it doesn't happen because of their special treatments, but if you're, like, an older woman, you know, older women's hair tends to thin.
Yeah.
If, like, you start going bald, whatever, if you, like, get shunned by the other females, you know?
Well, I mean, I'll get more into kind of how they, like, preserve their and like how they preserve their hair and also what different forms of their hair signifies. Mm. It's actually quite interesting. So for the woman of the village, long hair is a symbol of longevity. So the longer the length of your hair, the longer you are likely to live. But to now get to the rite of passage. In a unique yet strange tradition, the Yao woman only cut their hair once in their lifetime, and that's when they turn 18. Cutting your hair here is a rite of passage, implying the girl is of age and ready to marry. The bundle of hair is cut, but not thrown away, but rather is kept and tucked into like a bun on their head after they become mothers.
Okay.
So the weaved hair bun serves to distinguish married to unmarried woman. Mm. And I've seen photos of them, and I'll post a few up on our Instagram. It kind of looks like that traditional Chinese headwear where it's like this weird rounded bun on your head with another bun on top of it.
Okay.
So
kind of like you see the geishas and stuff with that.
Basically, it kind of looks like they still have long hair that's been put into a bun, but it's not. It's they've cut their hair. The hair also plays a really important role in the indication of social status for the woman. The unmarried Yao woman can be characterized by wearing a black turban. As single women are not allowed to show their hair in public. Other bizarre tradition of theirs is up until the 1980s is that no man was allowed to see a woman's hair until her wedding day, when her husband unveils her beautiful locks. Before the 1980s, men who saw the hair of a single woman, regardless of kind of where they were in communion and stuff like that, they would have to stay with the girl's parents for 3 years as their son-in-law.
What?
So if you, by chance, saw a girl's hair, you had to go live with her parents as her son-in-law. As part of respect.
So if a girl like really likes you, she's like tries to sneakily look at my hair.
Basically, yes.
Are you trapped now?
Thankfully, this tradition has kind of been thrown away, and since the 1980s, hasn't really been a thing. Because I mean, come now, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, no,
it's the states of their heads are as follows: if you see a woman's hair simply wrapped around her head, that means that she's married but doesn't have kids. But if you see a woman wearing a bun on her head, that means she's married with kids. So their hair is super crucial in their whole kind of like tradition and that.
Or you can just ask them.
Probably. But I mean, if there's only like 600 of you, you kind of have an idea of who's who.
Yeah.
Because let's get real, 600 includes all people.
Yeah.
But the Wanglo village has now become a popular tourist destination, obviously. China's going to make money somehow. And the village even has its own theater for tourists where the Red Yao woman in their traditional red costumes perform folk dances and songs and kind of narrate the history of their community.
I wonder how they felt about that when the Chinese government is like, hey, everyone, come look at our weird tribe. like a bunch of tourists just like walk in and is like, hey,
we're not weird, we promise. But it's China. I mean, China, dictator, they don't care. They're going to make money somehow. But in searching kind of like the whole hair traditions and stuff like that, I kind of realized that hair is a big part in a lot of rites of tradition, like a lot of rites of passage in that. And for example, in Hindu tradition, the hair from birth is associated with undesirable traits from your past lives. Thus, at the time of, it's called Mundane, which is basically the ceremony. It's one of the 16 ceremonies a child goes through. Before the end of its first year or kind of before its third year. Like you can't go beyond the third year with all of these 16 traditions. And in the ceremony, the child's freshly shaven to signify freedom from the past and moving into the future. It is also said that the shaving of the hair stimulates proper growth of the brain and nerves, and that the sicker which is kind of a tuft of hair at the crown, is left there to protect memory.
Okay.
So basically these kids have their heads shaven between ages 1 and 3 to basically save them from any previous things they've done in previous lives. If I can be corrected, I think the Hindu are super into reincarnation. So makes sense. Apparently in the Cook Islands, it's tradition for almost like a hair cutting ceremony as a rite of passage for young boys. At these gatherings, the boy sits in a chair draped in like a quilt. And as his hair is cut, members of the community plaster the boy with money and other gifts. This custom kind of serves to maintain like ties with the community and extended family and all that come past or whatever. Yeah. I'm okay with that one. I mean, you can cut my hair as a kid and give me like...
It's so interesting to me. Like hair is, even in our society and in our culture... Or lack thereof. It's like hair is still really important. Not so much for religious or kind of other traditional reasons, but more for like just how we see ourselves in society. Like hair, like guys that go bald, I mean, pay crazy amounts of, like there's corporations invested in helping guys keep their hair because it's like it's a social stigma to not have hair anymore.
There's some social status linked to not having hair where it's pretty much more than 50% of our population has thinning to bald hair. Like, it doesn't actually make sense.
It really doesn't. And I don't know if it's because of just appearance or you're trying to like show youthfulness still, you know? And
I think it has kind of ties to people under the impression that baldness is bad genes.
Yeah.
So everyone's like, ooh, like you don't want to kind of have that. But who cares? I mean, you're at a stage now where every second person is the same as you.
I mean, there are hundreds of people better looking than hundreds of other people that are bald.
Yeah,
like you can't say it's all about that. I mean, there's, I don't know. It's strange.
It is strange. No, I agree.
Give it a couple of years. I might not have any hair left, you know?
Luke, the guy with the long locks. But yeah.
Long locks.
Oh, goodness. But I mean, from me as a child as well, I mean, hair has always been a huge thing. I grew up on a farm in the middle of nowhere. And I mean, there wasn't like a hairdresser you could go to. I remember we used to sit outside on this really old bra place. Mm. One of those proper, like kind of bricked up bra place for overseas people, a barbecue. But in South Africa, it was done properly. You had a proper like brick built fireplace. And we basically used to sit there. My dad would give us a haircut. Like
with like sheep shears or something.
With real normal clippers. We're not savages. Rust. But yeah, he would give us a haircut. And I mean, it was that proper like short back and sides.
It's come back.
It has. Yeah. I mean, I would love it. I'm trying to get my girlfriend to cut my hair, but apparently it's the one thing she says she can't do.
Really?
So, yeah.
Debbie cuts mine every now and then.
I wish I could have like her cutting my hair. But she claims that it's a really horrible idea and we should never go down that path. So I'll stick with going to a hairdresser.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, hair's a massive thing. And I know for like other countries, cutting your hair signifies like giving because people give them away for transplant and for making fake wigs.
Yeah.
I mean, who would have thought? Hair's pretty much as important. I mean,
there's that whole cancer drive, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah. But it's interesting. I mean, I love seeing how hair is kind of seen in other cultures as something is super crucial. Yeah, you know, we sit and just like, shave it off. Who cares?
Yeah. They're like, no.
Yeah, we want it. I mean, it's interesting. But I'm super interested in yours. I won't lie. Like, the fact that you haven't told me what you're doing today.
You definitely heard of this one.
Okay. But it's okay. It's okay.
I am going to talk about one that I guarantee you've heard of. I mean, like it was probably one of the first things that came to mind as soon as you proposed this topic.
Okay.
So before I get to that, it's a bit of an introduction. So like with yours, your hair rite of passage, right? It was kind of it sort of shows, the entry into womanhood, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm in the same vein, but the entry into manhood.
Okay.
And which is what I find a lot of rites of passage are. In fact, the majority, I think, are about men entering manhood.
Correct. Majority of them are.
It's almost like, like entering manhood or like a level up in their society or in their culture, you know? So, I mean, there's some obvious well-known ones like Jewish boys doing a bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
To go men and women doing the bat mitzvah. We have our own local ones as well. So, like in the Cossack tradition, obviously, where they have what's called going to the bush.
Circumcision.
Where they get circumcised and have to deal with that pain alone in a bush somewhere and try and survive and fend for themselves.
Yeah, it's called basically becoming a maqueta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they, I mean, also with in regards to that, the tradition has changed over time a bit. It's, I think, a bit less strict. But I don't want to speak too much about it because I don't really know. So I'm going to say something wrong.
But I have some interesting stories to talk about that. So we'll go to that later.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you'll know a lot about it. So yeah, one that's fascinated me though is the Maasai tradition of young males having to hunt and kill a lion to become men.
Oh, I have heard of this and I love it. It's such a great story.
So for those that don't know, the Maasai are an ethnic group in Kenya who are very well known for being like proud and friendly people, who still to this day lead fairly nomadic lives. Whilst most have kind of assimilated into modern society, there are many who still prefer the simple traditional way. So you have this group of people and they have become bigger and bigger over time. I might say here down the line, but essentially they have upped their numbers to in the millions now.
Wow, so the tribe is actually quite big.
Yeah, it really is. But I think partly because they are no longer as sort of out there alone in the wild. Pretty much you'll have Maasai just being a regular part of society now and they just belong to the Maasai tribe. And therefore they just carry on like people integrated into modern society.
Okay, so it's not as, fair enough.
So not everyone is still traditional Maasai. And I think even the ones that are sort of integrated into society still hold, obviously, their beliefs and everything. And they probably all still go through this process. So they're very culturally rich peoples, usually wearing very vibrant reds and oranges. And they've got some really cool music and dances, the most notable being the jumping dance. Everyone knows about how high the Kenyans can jump, you know. It's all because of this Maasai jumping dance.
It's ridiculous. If you're interested, go look at a video. It is ridiculous. It's so cool.
It's very cool. Where they'll like hum and chant and do these, and they'll have like dance-offs with each other.
Yeah.
Like who can jump the highest and whatever. It's very cool
stuff. In all fairness, they have super long legs and they're skinny as hell. Like it's actually ridiculous.
Kenyans are tall.
They're
tall. Very tall, man. And anyway, back to the rite of passage. So these Maasai warriors, as I mentioned, are the ones who have to take part in a rite of passage to become warriors. So the term warrior, again, is kind of... there's a bit of a blurred line between becoming a man and becoming a warrior. By doing their rite of passage, you become a warrior, but therefore also the man, because you have to be a warrior to be a true
correct,
man.
Correct, yeah.
In their culture. So a bit of an important disclaimer. This tradition of young males needing to hunt and kill a lion to become a man has for the most part faded away.
Okay, I can imagine.
They don't really do it anymore. As modern society changes, so do ancient traditions. It's no longer the normal way that it's done, especially with the population now being over a million, as I said. It's obviously a very impractical and non-environmentally friendly thing to do.
Imagine
lions
are doing
guys
don't
going out to kill lions. There's not even like that many lions out there anymore. So, however, centuries ago, when the group was a lot smaller, the lion population a lot bigger, it was very commonplace that the young men of the Maasai tribe were tasked with hunting and killing a lion before they could become men or warriors of the tribe. It was also their way of winning the hearts of the females in the tribe, making themselves good candidates for marriage and for children. Again, you know, a strong man can kill a lion.
Obviously,
it's probably the coolest thing you can do. So there's quite a few stages in this tradition, though. But typically, boys who are between the ages of 12 and 25 are eligible to partake. An elder will often decide whether or not they're ready. First, the boys would be guided by the village elders to the lion. During this time, they would wear traditional clothing and have their body and face painted in all sorts of various ways. Which I think is kind of, there's probably a lot of subsects in the tribe and they all do their own different thing.
Yeah.
But generally they will be painted in some form. They'd have to go with their spears in hand, go forth and hunt the lions. One can obviously imagine it's a very dangerous procedure, but, the elders do guide them through it. So they aren't just left to go, you there, go kill a lion. the elders and stuff.
Which okay, well, at least kind
more
of,
than one
okay.
of them will be there to kind of protect him if things start going south.
Yeah.
And they kind of, as a group, find the lion for the guy.
Okay.
He's not expected just to go and roam until he finds one.
Well, I mean, I can imagine for a tribe that's probably dwindling in numbers at that point.
Yeah.
You don't really want to send all your young men.
Lions. Like, it doesn't make sense. With the kill in tow, the young man would then have to transition to the next stage, which they take into a tent and circumcised. As with many African traditions, it's quite a commonplace thing. Without anesthetic, so you can imagine how painful.
Yes.
They then have to wear black robes for anywhere between a few weeks and a few months. I'm not sure what dictates how long it's supposed to be. Any resource I got about this was quite vague.
Yeah.
I think it's up to the discretion of the elders and maybe up to them or maybe when they've healed.
I think it'll be up to the discretion of the elders. A lot of these tribes kind of work off of a you'll know when it's right type of thing. Right. Yeah.
And then finally, they'll be welcomed back into their society now as warriors and the protectors of the village. So it's pretty intense.
That is super intense.
But so this has changed now. There's no more lion hunting anymore. The other parts of the traditions do still hold true. They do still, for the most part, get circumcised and all that. And there's, you probably find you don't have to do it, like with cultures in South Africa as well. But if you don't, you kind of shunned a little bit.
Correct, yeah.
You're not seen as being a man amongst other men, you know?
Well, funny enough, in our culture, even if you go to... It's not about the end product of being circumcised. It's the process.
Mm.
So, for instance, if you're born or this... If you go to a later stage and you go to a hospital...
Yeah.
Same thing. You're not a man.
You're not a man. Yeah. You didn't make it.
So. Basically, you are shunned by everyone in your community that has been through it. Yeah. Which, I mean, it's kind of sad because, I mean, it's a deadly procedure.
It really is. And think about like modern men in general, and let's be real, a bit more, not as manly as we used to be. Let's say, like our parents, because we haven't had to really struggle.
Yeah.
We haven't had wars. Well, there have been wars, not in our.
Correct. Sort of not in our, especially Africa.
Yeah. And so. You know, a lot of men are not really being as, aren't as necessarily needing to be as manly as they once were.
Correct, yeah.
So, I mean, now it sounds fucking awful. I don't want to go sit there. So maybe then it's like all men do this. This is a man thing. Yeah. That sounds like the dumbest thing to me.
Yeah.
To me, again, because I don't want to do it. But I'm sure even many people now still feel it's very important.
I think a lot of them still feel it's very important. A lot of them who have listened to their elders over years and like... If you know that's coming, and I mean, they all do because it's all a part of their culture, you build yourself up to it. It's the same as if you talk to any of the old guys that have gone to army and that. You know it's coming. Yeah. You build yourself up for it. You get excited about it because you have no other choice but to be excited about it. So for them, it's not an excitement. It's more of a, okay, I'm ready for this because I know it's the next step. Mm.
I mean, it's true. Like if we kind of related to sort of more not so African societies, but like in terms of the army, for example, like if you are from a family of army goers and of soldiers and of generals and this and that, you know, you as a kid wants to grow up in that same environment.
Correct.
So think of that spread across a whole culture of people. That is how you brought up, you know, it's you like you amped like this is
I'm gonna be a part of this. Yeah, yeah. I'm a part of my tradition, my culture.
Yeah.
It's cool.
It is. It really is. I just don't like the idea of anything coming near my dick.
As a normal guy would be.
But that's pretty crazy. But so, as I said, this is kind of faded now. In 2008, a group of Maasai elders declared to some conservationists that they are no longer doing this anymore. The Kenyan government was kind of stepping in as well, and there are a lot of sort of tourism and conservation efforts coming to place now with all the lions.
Yeah,
and the elders pretty much agreed. They said, "No, you're right. We can't do this anymore." And they're going to not this aspect of their tradition. They're going to change it, which is probably quite tough. You've been doing it for generations.
And I mean, imagine being the first.
I think it's quite obvious to see because, I mean, your numbers are too huge and you got all these guys that can't become men because there's not enough lions around.
You
have to.
But, I mean, imagine being the first group of guys going through this and not being allowed to.
I'd be pretty upset.
I would feel a little bit cheated. Yeah. But I would agree with the reasons, but I'd be like... Oh.
So they've done a pretty cool thing now, though.
Okay.
Okay, to kind of help ameliorate the situation.
Holographic lines.
Yeah. Virtual reality lines. No, so what they do, they have a sort of Olympic Games, also known as the Maasai Olympics.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
And what they'll do is, okay, one of the articles I read says it takes place at the base of Mount Kilimanjaro. I don't think so. I think it's like they can hold it whenever they want.
Yeah.
And essentially, they get a bunch of young men trying to become men or warriors, and they'll have gone through the other procedures or before the procedures. I don't know where it fits in the timeline now, but basically, they will then do kind of tournaments and feats of strength, and they'll throw spears. Who can throw the spear the furthest? They will do the jumping thing, jump the highest, have the dance also where they jump, and do a whole bunch of various activities. In which, if they perform well enough, they become men. And I think, I don't know, you'd probably have to really be bad to not become a man.
Like, I think you'd have to screw up pretty big not to become a man.
Yeah, because I think if you do this, it's just one step in the whole process.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, you take part in this game, you prove that you are a strong, capable man, and that's taking the place of the lion killing. And it's generally accepted now, and everyone seems to be, judging by the articles I read, happy about it. But I don't know. I haven't spoken to a real Maasai, so he could be like, yeah, this is bullshit, dude.
I want to kill myself a lion.
But at least it sounds like it's humane and quite fun. So
yeah, I mean, it's a lot more humane and a lot more kind of conservative. But that's where the world's going. The world's going towards a more conservative type thing. So all these traditions and rites of passage that involve things further than like just their kind of area, it's now kind of affecting modern society and everything out of that. I mean, my crew are, 600 tribe members versus your million.
Yeah.
It's not sustainable. It's not sustainable to be a million odd members and having to go through that. Sure, if it's like an antelope or something, like an impala or a blizzard, cool, go crazy. That thing will breed five times as many before that. They can use the meat for food. Like, there's reason behind it. But I mean, a lion, sure, it's badass, but
you'd think that they would have put up some kind of like meet me in the middle kind of thing by saying, look, we're not going to hunt a lion because that's crazy. But let's at least show that they're capable hunters. And
correct.
They can go and hunt, as you said.
That's what I would think.
Instead of just completely do a 360, well, a 180, and go the other direction and just have a fun tournament between yourselves.
True. But I also think up until that point, they probably have hunted like a ton of gazelle at that point.
Yeah.
Not difficult.
I mean, judging by kind of their lifestyle, they probably do that on a daily basis to eat.
Exactly.
Part of the modern society section. But
go out of the shop, grab yourself some bananas, and you're good.
The Maasai thing is very much like, it's become a bit touristy as well. My family went to Kenya a few years ago. They're big off-road adventurers, and they wanted to go drive around Kenya and whatever. And they said at this one sort of, I wouldn't say resort, I mean, they camped the whole time, but they stayed at some place where they didn't camp. And Maasai people were like sort of hanging around there. I don't know if they were like the bodyguards or if they were just like part of the area, you know, in the full traditional garb. I can imagine maybe it's a bit of a touristy thing.
I think it is a bit of a touristy thing, especially if they're in their full kind of traditional outfits.
Yeah, the red cloaks, the spears.
Yeah. Because for reason, I mean, people want to see that. Unfortunately, people travel to see other traditions. Mm. But I mean, if you look at South Africa and where we are, you can go into the Transkei and there will be Xhosa people in their traditional outfits doing whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
Because it's an everyday thing. It's an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of people documenting their trips into Kenya and places like Tanzania and that, where the cultures in those areas are still very much the stereotypical kind of tradition, but they are a little bit more modernized.
Yeah.
They got TVs in their houses and all that.
My idea of probably what was happening was these are actually employees of the hotel.
Yes.
That are Maasai people. They have the traditional garb. And they said, look, we'll come and, you know, be all traditional, whatever, in the area and pay me.
Yeah. I'll be bodyguard. So, if someone comes out, I'll stab them with a spear.
Make your money.
You know? Yeah.
I don't think it's an insult to the culture. If anything, I think it's sort of showing more people a side into it.
Yeah,
culture.
I agree. So, I did watch a couple, like Fun for Louis and those guys, the travel vloggers of YouTube. And one of them went, I think it was actually Fun for Louis. He went to Kenya and they stayed at a place in Kenya. And he was actually doing a flight around Africa.
Yeah.
And he went there and he actually met one of the tribes. But like, this was one of the tribes which is still really, really, really like at their core, still that cultural tribe. Mm. And I think he had an iPad or camera with him and he took a photo with his iPad and then showed the kids the iPad and they all lost their shit. So they are still at that point and you can kind of see it from that angle. But I agree with you. Some of it is kind of like not put on, but used for a tourist aspect.
Definitely.
Which is not a bad thing. I think it's kind of cool. I mean, it's like it kind of keeps their tradition.
You see it in South Africa as well in certain places. Like in the more touristy areas, it'll be a whole bunch more African garb in this than what is kind of really seen in society. But another fun fact on the Maasai people, unrelated to rites of passage. But you know those pictures where you see like women with really big earlobes and stretched out lips?
And the lips one,
Yeah, that's Maasai, dude.
Is that the same crew?
It's one of many cultures that do that, but Maasai are one of them.
Okay.
Lips, I think a little bit, they're big into the ears.
Okay. And the one with the ring one, next?
I don't think that's them.
Because they call the giraffe people, or they like online term is the giraffe woman.
I don't think
they
go by that. That sounds.
No, it's like the giraffe woman of something. I mean, cultures around the world, everyone's so different. And I mean, like the ringnecks for the giraffe woman. Yeah. You look and you're like, wow, that's weird. But I mean, for them, it's like you don't put rings around your neck.
Yeah,
like, but your necks are so short. You guys are also ugly. It's a weird thing to think about, but I mean, it's true.
Yeah.
They see us as being lesser people.
That's true.
So you do you, man.
Entitled to their own opinions. That's what most of the segment, to be honest, has been us giving our opinions. I mean, what we say sounds kind of weird to us. It could be completely normal to other people.
Yeah. You know? Cultural and traditional things change.
Not throwing shade on anyone in particular just to cover our bases here. Don't get in trouble. Like, everyone does their own thing and it's perfectly cool.
For us, it's more kind of bringing these different lifestyles to the public ear because, I mean, we might know about these things, but people don't. And it's a cool thing to look into and to understand. And I mean, I find it hella interesting.
Yeah. I feel like it would have been a good idea to get like one of our black friends on to talk about the bush.
in a future episode.
We'll have a guest speaker to come and just tell us how wrong we were.
I think we need a culture corner just to kind of like, just to get us like straight sometimes. but yeah, that is it for us for today. I love doing these tribal episodes and Luke gets to do his cryptid.
I swear things. Like you wish you were just in a tribe somewhere still.
I'd love it. I would literally thrive so much. I would fish every day. I would chill out on the balcony.
That's how you know work life's getting to us.
Yeah. But I found interest in seeing aspects of other lives. Mm. I mean, we know how we live. Like, try and look into someone else's kind of culture and see how they live. It's interesting. So let us know if you found this interesting too. Also let us know if there's some other cool tribal things that you guys know about. If you have more information on stuff that we've completely gotten wrong, let us know.
Which is very possible.
Very possible. And we're not afraid to admit that it's very possible.
We do the best we can with internet research.
I was about to say, like our research can only take us so far.
What do you really know unless you're in the tribe?
Exactly.
What one guy, probably another white dude from wherever, published an article of what he interpreted from what it is, and it might actually be completely wrong.
Yeah, so ours is an interpretation on an interpretation. Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's the way it is.
Yeah. So we'll post up some cool photos on our Instagram at Odd Topic Podcast. So give us a follow there. Also, give us a like on Facebook, also at Odd Topic Podcast. We're on YouTube, same name, and you can also email us at community@oddtopicpodcast.com. With any kind of information, if you want to give us a kind of a hey, or if you want to give us some criticism, go for it. Also, please give us a follow on whatever platform you're listening on.
Yeah, it'll really
does help, and give us a rating as well. It kind of gets everyone else who kind of listens to the same things as you a chance at finding us. It really does help us a lot. So, yeah, thanks for listening. This was great. We'll see you next week with another fantastic episode. All right. Bye.
Goodbye.